Okay, guys, welcome back. And we are now going to start on step four. So step four is the remainder of the chapter, how it works. And it is divided into three different inventories. So we're going to do the introduction of what step four is, and then we're going to do the resentment inventory. I'm going to give you one example of a resentment that I had and how I worked that through the inventory process. And then we're going to take about a 5-minute break. I'll turn off the recorder. Take about a 5-minute break, have you guys work through one resentment yourself, and then anyone who wants to share, we can have you go up that resentment. And then if as long as you feel comfortable, I can give you some feedback and help you, because specifically that fourth column is where people need help, which we'll talk about, okay? So on 64, it's telling us what is the purpose of a fourth step inventory. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk about my experience working fourth steps differently than the big book method and my experience with that. There are different ways to work a fourth step. I was just telling someone this at break, I am a result-driven person. So if you're getting freedom working in a different method than the big book, continue to do that, and that's how you're going to sponsor, because I believe God will bring people to you that you can help. But what I'm hoping to do is give you a clear idea of what the big book method is, so if you want to try that, try it specifically. Because you're not going to get specific results unless you do the specific directions. Does that make sense? So I don't want to offend anybody if they do their fourth step differently. Check your own experience. So it says, therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This is the first paragraph on 64. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Take a commercial inventory as a fact-finding and a fact-facing process. So a business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. That, to me, is a precursor to the idea that I learned this skill set in 4 through 9, and then I continue to do it in 10 and 11. And if I don't continue to do it, then I'm going to go broke, meaning I'm going to go back to the food. So this is just a skill set we're learning. So I use the simple analogy of someone who's in nursing school. If you go through nursing school, you graduate, you get your degree, you take your boards, but you never work in a hospital, do you really feel like a nurse? You know, when the rubber hits the road, it's not when you're in class and you can calmly do, you know, the procedures that the teacher's teaching you. The real test is when you're in an ER and you hear stat, stat, stat because there was a 10-car pileup on whatever your local highway is. So we learn the skill set, but letting us know if we don't make this a part of our lifestyle, we're going to go broke again. And it's fact-finding and fact-facing. This is not supposed to be an emotional process. And it's not something I'm going to say here quickly, too. My personal experience, again, is I would so emotionalize this step process that I would have to pick up, because I was reliving trauma over and over. And that's not what the fourth step is about. The fourth step is about getting down to causes and conditions, and that's it. So it's not supposed to be this emotional idea. And it's fact-finding and fact-facing. I used to do autobiographies. You know, I would say, okay, what was my life like between the ages of 0 and 5, and then 6 and 10, and 11 and 15? The process here is to find out what's blocking us from our power. If I haven't thought about the guy who made fun of me in third grade since I was in fourth grade, there's no reason for me to rehash that. I just want to know what's blocking me. It is an effort to discover the truth about the stock in trade. One object is to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods, to get rid of them promptly and without regret. If the owner of the business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about values. So one object is to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods. I need to know what's blocking me from my power. Once again, my experience was I used to have inventories that I would list my assets and what was working for me. That's not blocking me from God. Now, the reason my opinion is, the reason I was told to do that, because they didn't want me to get so depressed about the bad stuff. But it's one object. You know, one object of an inventory might be to count how many blouses you have in your inventory. The other object is to find out what blouses aren't selling so you can get them out of your inventory. To be working at a Best Buy and be selling VHS tapes, not going to be helpful. We got to get rid of them because they're not going to sell. So we have to not fool ourselves about the value. What you were doing when you were 6 years old, is it working for you at 36, 46, or 56 years old? We can't fool ourselves about that value. And the idea that we get rid of them promptly and without regret, once again, my experience is I would sit in a fourth step for years You know, when I heard thorough, I thought whoever wrote the most won. You know, I mean, if I have, if you have a three-subject notebook, I'm very competitive. If you have a three-subject notebook in your as your fourth step, if I have a five-subject notebook filled, then I win. So promptly and without regret is we got to do this quickly. Once again, my experience is I don't give my people I work with more than 7 to 10 days to go through their fourth step, because I don't want them staying in there. And what I do is the second that we start that fourth step, we make an appointment for that fifth step, because it is uncomfortable to be in your fourth step. And now you know you only have 7 to 10 days to sit in that uncomfortability. You know, I remember I was in a texting thing where I, someone from my inner group, and I told her it was 7 to 10 days, and she kept saying, "Are you serious? Are you serious? I've been working on my fourth step for 3 years."
Oh my.
And I said, "Have you been abstinent?" "Well, of course not." I'm like, "Okay, well then we need to talk about this," you know, because we have to be abstinent during the process. So promptly without regret. And for me personally, when I did these four steps where I would just relive trauma and answer a bunch of questions and try to understand why it's my mother's fault, is I would get more attached to my resentments. I would get more attached to my fears, and I would get more attached to my sex conduct. Because my primary purpose in many fourth steps prior to the Big Book Method was to make that person who took my fifth step hate these people as much as I hated them. And I was going to prove that I was right. So once again, the Big Book Method is not set up that way. If you do other methods and it works for you, great. But I want to make you just make sure you understand how the Big Book Method is. And that was my experience, is why they didn't work for me. I needed something simple. Okay, so as we did exactly the same thing with our lives, we took stock honestly, we searched out the flaws of our makeup, which caused our failure. Being convinced that self manifested in many ways was what had defeated us, we consider as common manifestations. So are we convinced at this point, through steps, our admission of our powerlessness, step one, our admission that we need a power in step two, and the decision to seek another way of living in step three, are we convinced that we need to do this work? So now we're going to go into the resentment inventory, the bottom of page 64. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys, not once again, not irritates, not tweaks, it destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease. For we have not only been mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. That's a great promise, isn't it? In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, and principles with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, we found it was our self-esteem, our pocketbook, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened, so we were sore and we burned up. So the Big Book Method has it simply as four columns, and it's a list. You know, when you make a grocery list, you put from top to bottom, right? You don't write from left to right. So what we're doing is we're going to do the first column, top to bottom, and however you want to do it. Some people do one column a day. Maybe you'll take a 20-minute break in between. Then you do your second column. Finish that second column. If something occurs to you that should be on the first column, add it on. And then you take a break, and you do your third column, and then you take a break, and you do your fourth column. What I think is brilliant about this method, again, is when you go from left to right, you get emotionally involved in the trauma again. And you get worked up and you get freaked out. So if you do it by list, it keeps it fact-finding and fact-facing. Okay? So it's telling in the first column, we write down people, institutions, or principles. So what I am trying to do is find out what is taking up rent in my head. What is blocking me from God? So I'm not trying to remember the kid from third grade that made fun of me. You know, when you go through your day, what is taking up most of the time in your head? I'll just give you one extreme example. I worked with a girl that's father molested her, and through AA and counseling, she had resolved that. Her father was dead, they made amends, and it was amazing to me. She saw how spiritually sick her father was. She saw that her father only touched her when he was drunk, found out he was molested and beaten as a child. And she thought about all the things that she did in alcohol that she was ashamed of. And she was able to forgive her father. the thing, and she goes, do I need to put that on my fourth step? I'm like, no, if it's not blocking, there's no reason to put that on your fourth step. The thing that was on her fourth step, which tortured her, was her neighbor's dog barking. Because it barked all night and she never got sleep. So once again, it's not about, don't try to label things good, bad, worse. What is taking up rent in your head? And that's all you're putting down there. Because remember, we're learning a skill set. If something's going to bother you, and you don't think of it right now, it'll be taken care of in step 10. Because a lot of times as we're clearing up our head, we're not remembering things. And then personally for me, when you start taking fifth steps, a lot of times that brings up stuff you have to now bring through the inventory because you're someone telling you their stories. Oh shit, I forgot that happened to me too. I better deal with that in step 10. Okay. So people, institutions, and principles. So I always tell people, start with your immediate family members. I'm sure they take up rent in your head. And then just keep going. Just people. Institutions are like, for example, if you're a Democrat, maybe it's the Republican Party. If you're a Republican, maybe it's the Democratic Party. You know, for me, it was Catholic schools. Maybe it's the IRS. Maybe it's the PTA. Maybe it's that Little League group that you know, the mothers that you can't stand. So whatever group of people is those institutions that take up rent in your head. And then there's the principles. Those are a little bit harder. And once again, don't try to figure out, oh, I have to have three principles. I have to make these up. But I think of them as this, you know, the idea that, fat girls don't get asked out on dates. You know, the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. I'll tell you, one of my resentments was, and I would hear people in OA meetings saying, I'm just so sick of people saying, if only you lose weight, you have such a pretty face. And the reason I hated that is no one ever said that to me. No one. I had cystic acne. I had teeth where I had a defect where I had twice the number of teeth I should have. I could barely keep my mouth closed. I would have killed for someone to tell me I had a pretty face. So it's amazing how these principles come up. Okay?
Can you just list again? I'm sorry. I couldn't find it in the book. People?
It's on the bottom of 64, and it says people, institutions, and principles. It's four lines up from the bottom.
Got it. Thank you.
Okay? So once we do that list, the next one is the cause. And you see on page 65 the cause. Let's look at this. Mr. Brown, his attention to my wife, told my wife about my mistress. Brown may get my job. That's some pretty serious stuff. But yet it's only 19 words. So I give my sponsees 20 words. We're not here to relive trauma. Well, I'll give you an example. If I want to put down my mother, and the cause is she treats me like a child. And what I want to do is give you 500 examples of how she does that to prove that I am right. But the simple thing is she treats me like a child. So when we do this exercise, I want you to think about that. You want to put the cause in less than 20 words. Fact-finding, fact-facing, not emotionalizing. So you can see how that's not going to take a lot of time. The third column is, what does it affect? Once again, the way that I do the method is you are acknowledging, does it affect it? I'm not writing how it affects it. Once again, that would be emotionalizing it, get me into that upset mode. So I'm asking in that third column, does it affect my self-esteem, how I feel about myself? Yes or no? My security, whether that's financial, physical, however that is, your feeling of safety. Yes or no? My ambitions, what I want out of life. My personal relationships, yes or no? Sex relations, yes or no? And the fourth one is fears involved, yes or no? And I'm simply doing a checklist. And you can see, you could probably do your fourth step in an afternoon of resentments. Because I don't know about you, but I know who I'm angry at. That part isn't hard, that I work my way through these three columns. Does that make sense to everybody before we move on to the why?
Yes.
Any further? Okay. So let's go to the bottom of page 65. They're now going to tell us what happens. Once again, I love the warnings. Oh, there was a question.
Oh, I just wanted to, so under the SMR, so is that pretty much, what's on page 65 is pretty much all encompassing, there's nothing really, as long as it's going to affect your self-relation, your self-esteem, your sex, your personal, your pride, is there anything else?
No. The Big Book Method is really simple with that. we'll learn about, this is one of the things too when we get into the character defects, because we're going to talk about four character defects. I have a psychology degree, which really is one of my prejudices, because I like to wrap things up in really pretty packages and talk about my abandonment issues and my passive aggressiveness. If I whittle them down, it comes into four defects. So we can probably think of other things that it affects, but if you whittle them down, it's probably going to be, the category is going to be in here. So I try to keep it as simple as possible. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
Can you tell me how self-esteem and fear relate to each other? They seem to kind of put those in the same category.
It's a precursor to that idea that everything is about fear. Whenever I'm threatened, my self-esteem is threatened. My security is threatened. My ambitions are threatened. I'm afraid. And we're going to find out. Remember, we were told we were driven by 100 forms of fear. So it's just kind of a precursor to let you know that fear is really what we're going to be drilling down to. I have never done any 4-step or 10-step work where I haven't checked off fear personally. It's the core of what drives me. Okay? So let's drop down to the page, bottom of 65. We went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent was that this world and its people were often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we continued to stay sore. So there's the warning. If we stay in these first three columns, and I can understand that, because look, that chart on page 65 doesn't show the fourth column. And because I don't like to read, I'm going to look at the crib notes, and I'm not going to realize there's a fourth column. Once again, looking back at my experience, my fourth steps were simply autobiographies telling you why people wronged me. I never got to how I played in that role. So if we don't want to stay in those first three columns, what's going to happen is people are going to continue to wrong us, we're going to continue to stay sore, and we're going to continue to binge. Sometimes it was remorse, and then they were sore ourselves, but the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victory we seemed to win, our moments of triumph were short-lived. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? It is impossible for me to live in 2015 if I'm dragging around 1985 when I graduated high school. I can't. And it says futile and unhappiness. That's what the first three columns are supposed to show me, is that if I continue to live this way, my destiny is futility and unhappiness. But with the alcoholic whose hope, now, I don't know if it says it in your book, but I heard in the original edition it said whose only hope. I don't know why they took out that word only. But whose only hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. And they're going to kill us three times in this paragraph. Infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal. We're dead again. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns and we drink again. And with us, to drink is to die. We're dead again. If we were to live, we had to be free of anger. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men, but for alcoholics, these things are poison. So I grew up in the 70s. So when I hear the word grouch, I think of, you know, the guy who lives in the trash can on Sesame Street. And when I hear brainstorm, I think of a marketing technique where everyone throws out their ideas. What it meant in the 1930s was the grouch was the person who was angry all the time. And the brainstorm was someone who had sudden outbursts of rage. In my family, that's called being Irish. Her Irish is coming out. There's sudden brainstorms. And it is the dubious luxury of normal men. So in step three, we heard most people live by self-propulsion. So most people can do that, but we can't. Most people can get involved in anger. Think of our politics. People are very successful marketing anger. But I can't do that. So an example for me is last year when we had a bad winter again in New Jersey. And my company is based out of Atlanta, so they don't understand snow either. And we would have to close. And our company would not pay us, or they'd make us use vacation days. It was off. It was mean. And people were justifiably angry. But I knew I couldn't. I had to do a lot of 10th and 11th step work because my consequences in anger, justified or not, is I will drink and I will die. So we have to understand that. Anger is a normal emotion, but we as compulsive overeaters cannot handle that without eating. So it says we turned back to our list, for it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. I used to hear we're going to look at my part. And that assumes someone else has a part, which means I'm to blame, and they're to blame, or whatever. I like the way the big book says it. We were prepared to look at it from a totally different angle. We began to see the world and its people really dominated us. I haven't seen little Johnny since fifth grade, but the way he made fun of my teeth, to this day when someone tells me I have a nice smile, I think they're making fun of me. So is that Johnny's fault for what he said to me when I was 11, or is it me reliving it in my head 30, 40 years later?
You.
Thank you. Because I can't find Johnny to hit him. I better change me. Okay. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had the power to actually kill. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered. We can master our resentments through the step process. But how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. So fancied or real, I'll just give you one example from my fourth step is, I come from a large Irish Catholic family on my mom's side, and we used to go to events, and me and my brother would sit there, and I'm the youngest, I'm the oldest in my family, but I'm the youngest of most of my cousins. They're usually much older than I am. And I would sit there, and I would try to be good, and I would try to be good, and I would try to be good, and invariably my mom would come over and say, "That's it, we're out of here." And I couldn't figure out what I did wrong. And I would try to be better and quieter and more in the corner the next time, and she would still come over at one point and say, "That's it, we're out of here." And I have internalized that. Whenever I get in a room with a lot of people, I go in the corner and I be quiet and I try not to get noticed. I have made that a part of my persona. And my mom's an OA. So I was telling her, I was about in this fourth step, I'm like, "Mom, do you know what that's about?" And she's like, "Let me think about it." And she came back to me a couple of days later and said, "Kim, I think I know what that's about." I'm like, "What?" My grandfather, my mom's dad, was an active alcoholic till the day he died. And she knew which beer was going to put him over the edge. And she never wanted her kids to see her father that way. So when he had that beer, she would come over to us kids and say, "That's it, we're out of here." So this thing that I internalized my whole life was not real. And suddenly it made sense to me. My cousins would tell these stories about my grandfather walking down in his underwear or passing out in the bushes, and I didn't know what they were talking about because my mom didn't want me to see that. So it was fancy. But not only that, my brother is a year younger than me. And I asked my brother about this. He doesn't even remember this. So it's not even that kids saw it differently. It's the way that Kim internalized it. So that's where I have to look at it from a totally different angle. Why was I so sensitive? Why was I always looking to think about why I was doing something wrong? And I can now change that. And I still get that way. Coming into a room of strangers. I felt that way when I came in here today. And I have to remember and do a 10 step in my head and realize that's old behavior. It's fancied. It's not real. And I want to connect with you people instead of staying in a corner because I'm afraid. Does that make sense?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's keep going. This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like their symptoms, column 2, the way they disturbed us, column 3, they, like ourselves, were sick too. I mean, I know when I'm feeling good, I'm not a mean person. I'm a nasty person when I'm not feeling good about myself. So maybe it's the same with them. We ask God to help us show the same tolerance, pity, and patience we would cheerfully show a sick friend. When a person, not if, when a person offended, we said to ourselves, "This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God save me from being angry, thy will be done." So here's the sick man's prayer. This is the resentment prayer. And just to show you what a mistake that I made that someone pointed out, which has really helped me, is I would learn these prayers. I'd learn the third step prayer. I'd learn these fourth step prayers. I'd learn the seventh step prayer. And I would leave it in the step once I was done that step. These are prayers that we learn in the third step. We learn in the fourth step. We should be utilizing this all the time. If when someone offended, we do that. And you notice it says, "God save me from being angry." Not "God save me from what they're doing." Nobody has to change for my life to change. I need to be saved from my anger. And the simple way I look at this too, my youngest brother is learning disabled. He's in his early 40s, but he's probably emotionally about 12. And he does not look disabled. So when we go to a restaurant, and he reads about like a second grade level, and he starts to have a hard time with the menu, and the waitress is so annoyed, like, stop giving me a hard time, basically the look on their face. And the second they realize he's not being difficult, he can't read the menu, I can see their face soften. I can see the compassion in their voice. And I thought to myself, if I can treat the world the way I wish the world treated my brother, get emotional right now, my life would change. I just can't see their disability. I can't see their fear. I can't see their hurt. So if I can treat people that way, then my whole experience of life will change. There's an AA speaker who I love who said, my life has changed because I make the decision every morning to forgive the first 20 assholes that I meet. Because the second I'm out the door, I meet them. They're there. So this is what this is doing, is this is softening us so that we can now look at this from a totally different angle. Okay, we avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we would destroy our chance of being happy. We cannot be helpful to all people. Sometimes the most helpful thing I can do is just keep my mouth shut. But at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. So now we're going to get into that fourth column. And I heard this analogy, which I love. The guy said, the first three columns, we're in court, and I am the prosecuting attorney. This is the person that made it, you know, is on trial. This is what he did, and this is how it affected society. And now I'm softening, and I become the defense attorney in column four. This is what my client did. This is how my client was affected. This is how I affect the world. Does that make sense? So that's what, to me, it means from a totally different angle. I'm going from the prosecutor to the defense attorney. Okay, so it says, referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, column two, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly, and we were willing to set these matters straight. So that fourth column, you're going to have selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. And once again, I would put keep it to 20 words. You're not going to write a book about this. Okay, so, and I know you guys had Lori here last year, and Lori helped me when I went to one of his weekends, because the big book doesn't say the difference between selfish and self-seeking, and I don't want you guys to get, you know, tweaked about it. If you only can see self, just don't worry about having to have an answer for both of them. But the way that he described it really made sense to me. Selfish is, I'm a two-year-old child, and I have a toy, and it's my, and no one is going to get it. Self-seeking is, I'm a two-year-old kid, and my friend has the toy, and I'm going to do whatever I can to get it. So selfish is looking in, and self-seeking is looking out. The dishonesty, the two definitions he gave, which really helped me, which is honestly is a large part of my 10th step, is my dishonesty, is I'm very cash register honest. I'm a Catholic school kid. I'm afraid to be dishonest because the priest is going to get me. But the two definitions he gave me which really hit me was dishonesty is not seeing the world for the way it is, but the way I want it to be. So, for example, with my mother, my dishonesty was I wanted her to be Carol Brady. I wanted a sitcom mom, and I got Joan Craig. You know, so when I have pain with her today, it's because I am worried about how, when I hang out with Joan, she's a blast. When I hang out with Kim's mother, I'm miserable. Because it's what I'm putting on her. That's my dishonesty. And the other was not telling the truth when the truth needs to be told. Once again, I learned to stay in a corner and not cause trouble as a kid. So part of my dishonesty is when something happens, I might need to speak up. And I might be angry, because I don't know about you, but people do not read my mind very well. I want them to do something, and I think just me thinking it, they should behave the way I want them to behave. So it's my dishonesty that I'm not really speaking up. Okay? So that is what we have for the fourth step. So I'm going to turn off the recording now.